Chapter 15. It's never too late to panic. Popular Valhallan folk saying. I don't mind admitting that the aftermath of the fight in the corridor had left me completely drained, both mentally and physically. I washed the worst of the dust from my throat with a couple of swallows from my canteen, but I couldn't shake the gritty feel of it from my skin, or my hair, or the inside of my clothes. And I wouldn't be able to either until about the third shower. As it turned out, by the time I got the opportunity for that, the dust would be the least of my worries. And Jürgen was dead. I still couldn't quite believe it. After so many years and so many dangers faced and bested together, the sense of loss was numbing and quite unexpected. Somehow I'd always assumed we'd meet our ends together. When fate finally pitched me into something my luck and finely honed survival instinct couldn't get me out of. So, for an indeterminate time, I said nothing, and trailed after Amberley, who at least seemed to have some kind of a plan. All this time, I remember, I kept my pistol in my hand. A curious thing to do, as we were in no apparent danger, but I'd somehow kept hold of it when the wall collapsed and felt strangely reluctant to return it to its holster. Later, I found bruising on my palm where I'd been grasping it, so tight was my grip.
As I said before, he seemed to be suffering from shock for some time after we lost our companions. He was, however, remarkably robust, and recovered far more quickly than I would have believed possible. No doubt the many perils he'd faced and escaped before had inured him to some extent to psychological traumas most men would have found incapacitating.
We'd gone some distance in silence before Amberley spoke again, the pressure in my ears telling me that the tunnel we were in had begun to descend gradually, but there didn't seem to be any obvious route back to the surface, so I guessed this was as good a direction as any. I suppose I should have mentioned it, but it never occurred to me that she wouldn't have noticed. If I'd realised that she hadn't and thought we were still moving on the level, I certainly would have mentioned it, believe me, especially if I'd known what was waiting down there on the lowest tier. "Well, I guess that answers the main question anyway," she said. "Which question?" I asked. By now the whole situation had become so bizarre that none of it seemed to make any sense. I was beginning to feel that the only thing I could truly rely on was the prospect of more treachery and confusion to come, and in that I was far from disappointed. Amberley looked momentarily surprised, and then pleased that I'd responded. "The main one," she repeated. "Who would have something to gain by provoking a war with a Tau?" "The High Fleet," I said, and shuddered despite the clammy warmth of the tunnel. If the Steelers were indeed the harbingers of a fresh Tyranid onslaught, then they were working to a more grandiose strategy than any I'd heard of before, and the implications of that were far from comforting. She nodded, clearly pleased with my response, and intent on prolonging the conversation. I assume she was trying to keep me centred on the mission and prevent me from dwelling too much on what had happened to our companions.
He assumes correctly. Right then, I needed a warrior with me, not a basket case.
The Steeler cult has obviously been active here for several generations already. Lucky it's such a backwater, or the contagion might have spread halfway across the sector by now.
Well, that's something, I agreed.
I know from my subsequent contacts with her that she followed up the possibility anyway, and managed to eradicate a couple of small subcults which had made the hop to neighbouring systems before they got properly established. But the danger did indeed seem to have been contained, at least until the High Fleet showed up in person, and we realised we were facing a war on two fronts. I thought for a moment, then added, "They've obviously been here long enough to infiltrate the PDF pretty thoroughly." "Among other things," the Inquisitor agreed. I nodded too, beginning to be drawn into the conversation in spite of myself. "It looks like they managed to get involved in the local political groups too, the Xenoist faction."
"And the Loyalist,"
she smiled grimly. "Raising the tension between the two, splitting the PDF. Its currency to cabbages, it was cultists in both factions who started them shooting at each other and got the Loyalists to attack the Tau. Hoping to draw us into a war so we'd chew each other to pieces and let the High Fleet walk into the sector practically unopposed." I shuddered again. "It's diabolical, and it came so close to succeeding."
"It still might." Amberley's voice was grim. "We're the only two left who know about this. If we can't tell the Lord General, They might still succeed. I finished for her. The prospect of that was almost too grim to be contemplated, and we walked on together in silence for some time. Perhaps it was just as well that we did, for, after a while, I began to detect a faint murmur up ahead over the scuff of our boot soles through the thick dust which carpeted the corridor ahead of us. I had found that reassuring, since it would muffle our footfalls and indicated quite clearly that no one else had been this way in decades, which meant we were unlikely to be running into any more ambushes. The presence of other sounds down there, though, might be a cause for concern. I held up my hand and doused my luminator, waiting again for my eyes to adjust, the last remnants of my torpor dropping away like a blanket at reveille, replaced by a sudden surge of adrenaline. "What is it?" Amberley asked, following suit and plunging us into even deeper darkness. "I'm not sure," I admitted, "but I think I can hear something." To my pleased surprise, she didn't ask for more details, evidently trusting me to provide them if I had them, so I concentrated my energies on listening. It wasn't even a sound as such, more a vibration in the air. The nearest I can come to explaining it is by saying that it was akin to the way I could tell roughly how close I was to a wall in the dark by the way the echoes changed. Bottom line is, you either know what I'm talking about, in which case you probably grew up in the Underhive too, or you'll just have to take my word for it. In any event, there was nothing to be gained by staying here, so we moved on at last, trusting my dark-attuned senses rather than activating the luminators again. My palms were tingling in that old familiar way, and Amberley seemed to trust my instincts, at least in this environment. The corridor continued to be relatively open ahead of us, so moving in the dark was less taxing than you might think, and I gradually became aware of a faint luminescence ahead of us in the gloom. "Is that light ahead?" Amberley murmured, confirming my thought, and I whispered an agreement. The sounds were getting louder too, but still too faint to discern. There was an organic quality about them, though, which raised the hairs on the back of my neck. "About half a clom," I added, still keeping my voice low and hefting the pistol in my hand. "Maybe it's a way up to the surface," she whispered hopefully. I shook my head, not sure whether she would be able to see the movement yet against the gradually intensifying glow. "We've come too deep for that. We must have gone down at least 3 levels in the last couple of hours."
"And you didn't say anything?"
Her voice was a furious hiss, and for the first time I realised she hadn't noticed the change in depth.
"We were supposed to be looking for a way out, in case you'd forgotten." "I thought you knew," I snapped back, feeling oddly defensive. "You're the one in charge of this expedition, remember?"
"I am.
Oh, yes, now you come to mention it, I suppose I am."
There was a petulant edge to her voice, which I found incongruously at odds with her rank and power, and all at once I felt an overwhelming urge to laugh. It was probably just the tension, but the full absurdity of the situation suddenly hit me. Here we were, the only two people left alive to warn the Imperium of a terrifying threat, lost, alone, outnumbered, surrounded by an army of monsters, bickering like a couple of juvies on a disappointing date. I bit my lower lip, but the harder I tried to suppress it, the more the laughter effervesced inside my chest, until it finally escaped with an audible snort. That did it. She lost her temper completely.
"You think that's funny?" she snapped,
all thoughts of concealment now completely forgotten. I should have been terrified, of course, the wrath of Inquisitors not being something to be lightly invoked, but hysteria had me now, and I simply howled with glorious, tension-relieving laughter.
"Of course not,"
I managed to get out between rib-shaking paroxysms.
"But this whole thing, it's just it's so ridiculous." "I'm glad you think so," she said frostily. "But if you think I'm just going to forget..."
A brief hiccup interrupted her flow of invective.
"Forget this... Oh, Emperor, damn it all!"
And it infected her too. The throaty chuckle I'd found so appealing before erupted from her chest like magma. After that, there was no stopping either of us, and we simply held each other up until we could finally force the air to remain inside our aching ribs.
I would just like to point out here that this is a perfectly normal reaction to severe stress, which can in no way be interpreted as irresponsible behaviour under the circumstances.
Afterwards, we both felt more like ourselves again and were able to press on with renewed vigour. We'd resumed moving stealthily, though, as the mere fact that more cultists and stealers had failed to boil out of the walls at us probably meant we were alone down here. But we'd made enough noise between us to attract any search parties in the vicinity. Having nothing else to aim for, we kept moving towards the mysterious glow in the distance, and the closer we got, the brighter it became. "That's definitely artificial," Amberley said, the yellowish tinge of electro-illumination unmistakable from this distance. By the backwash of light it gave, I was able to make out more of our immediate surroundings, and I was surprised to note that the stonework surrounding us was now carefully dressed, the vaulted roof being supported by well-crafted columns. "I think we're in a cellar of some kind," I hazarded in an undertone. Amberley nodded. "I think you're right." She had the Auspex out again and was studying the display. "And there are people down here. Not many, according to this, but..." She didn't have to finish the sentence. Hybrid cultists might not register on it, and any pure strains in the vicinity certainly wouldn't. Advancing would be a terrible risk, but turning back, trying to find another route to the surface through a tunnel complex swarming with stealers and their dupes would be almost as bad. And there was the time factor, too. The longer we took to report back, the longer the conspirators would have to provoke their war, assuming it hadn't broken out already. "Only one way to find out," I agreed, and we started cautiously forward again. The light was coming from a huge chamber, a high-vaulted ceiling supported by columns similar to the ones I'd noticed in the corridor, but far higher and thicker. Like the chamber we'd seen before, where the cultists had attacked us, there was a wide gallery running around the edge of the room, with a number of smaller tunnel mouths opening onto it. But to my relief, I couldn't see anyone or anything up there. This time, however, there was no humming machinery filling the space. It was light and airy, with braziers burning incense on marble plinths and littered with antique statuary. Dusty boxes were everywhere, and I surmised we'd stumbled across some long-forgotten depository which the cultists had appropriated for their own purposes. We slunk into it like thieves and took shelter behind one of the pillars holding the roof up. It was as thick as a cathedral column and almost as wide as I am tall, and concealed the pair of us with ease. "Stairs," Amberley nudged me and pointed. Off to one side, a wide stone staircase rose to the gallery, from where another flight rose, cut into the stonework, rising out of sight. "Great," I whispered back. But getting to them would be another problem entirely. I could see figures moving around in the distance, some of them armed. There was the usual mixture of civilian clothing and PDF uniforms I'd grown used to seeing among the cultists, and something else, a bright flash of crimson and gold. I nudged Amberley and pointed. "Palace guard," she nodded in response. That was a real surprise. From what Denali had said, I'd assumed they were all dead by now, but the cultists, as I'd seen on Kefia, would always try to look after their own. I began to suspect that their defence of the governor hadn't been quite as inept as they'd wanted us to think, forcing the situation to escalate by bringing the PDF onto the streets where their brood brothers could begin to work their insidious mischief. Instead of the antique long arm he'd been issued with, he was carrying a modern lasgun, looted, I assumed, from the PDF armory. "We'll have to get past them," she whispered. I nodded. Not an appealing prospect by any means, but one we would have to attempt. If we kept to the cover of the pillars and the other detritus, we might just make it, at least most of the way, before we were spotted. When that happened, we'd just have to make a run for the stairs as best we could. As we moved off, I glanced around again, more by reflex than anything, trying to fix a sense of the space in my mind. Disorientation can be a killer in a firefight. And then it struck me. "This is a shrine," I murmured. Amberley didn't seem in the least surprised, but then I supposed she'd realised that the moment we'd walked in here. There were tapestries on the walls, which, now I came to look at them, I found myself recoiling from in horror. Blasphemous things they were, holy images of the Emperor profaned and debased, the father of all depicted as a hunched hybrid with too many arms, or a monstrous pure-strain stealer which seemed to tower over its adoring acolytes. I resolved to send a squad down here with flamers the moment we reported back. It seemed almost intolerable to me that such things should be allowed to exist. "Ready?" Amberley asked at my shoulder, and I nodded, making the sign of the Aquila for luck. My pistol was already in my hand, as I've said, and I drew my chainsword quietly with the other, thumb poised over the activator. Amberley drew her bolt pistol, checked that the first round was chambered, and nodded grimly. Right, go! We scuttled as far as the next pillar and went to ground again, my heart pounding in my ears. I was acutely aware of the background noise now, the sound I'd noticed in the corridor, the hum of activity as the cultists moved to and fro, but in eerie silence, as they had done in the chamber full of machinery. Praise the Emperor, none of them had spotted us. We moved again, making it to the shelter of the next column, and then on to the one after that. I was just beginning to hope that we would make it all the way to the stairs and whatever lay beyond, when the crack of a lasbolt against the stonework close to my head told me we'd been spotted. I turned, in time to see the palace guard levelling his lasgun for another shot, and brought up my pistol, but Amberley was faster and her bolt pistol spat first. His chest exploded in a rain of red entrails and shredded gold armour, and before you know it we were in the middle of a serious firefight. Two more armed cultists appeared, attempting to catch us in a crossfire, and we took one each, another chest shot for Amberley and a headshot for me, blowing the fellow's brains out through the back of his skull. Show off, Amberley grinned at me, and I didn't have the heart to tell her it had been a fluke. I'd aimed for the chest as well, and he ducked at just the right moment. More shots were being aimed at us from behind the pillars, but they were as well protected as we were, and our return fire had little effect beyond persuading them to keep their heads down. Looks like a standoff. What'll they do now? Rush us, I said, not relishing the prospect. Sure enough, a moment later we could discern a scuttling in the shadows, and my heart fell. Merciful Emperor, it's pure strains. A swarm of them, about a dozen strong, was hurrying towards us across the stone floor of the vault. A couple went down to our bolts and las shots, more by luck than judgment, I suspect, and in another moment I knew they'd be on us. I gripped my chainsword, determined to fend them off for as long as I could, clinging to the last desperate hope that I could somehow cut my way through to the stairwell, which right then looked about half the segmentum away. Suddenly an explosion rocked their ranks, then a couple more. Dazed and uncomprehending, I glanced upwards, expecting I knew not what. Perhaps the Emperor himself, since only divine intervention looked like saving us now. What I saw was almost as unexpected. The familiar shambling form of Jürgen, even grubbier than usual, lobbing frag grenades over the balustrade of the gallery. A small explosion of joy and relief shook my chest, and I grabbed Amberley's arm. Look! She glanced up and nodded, as though she'd half expected something of the sort, and stood. Time to run, she said, cool as you please. She headed for the stairs, and I followed, waving an acknowledgement to Jürgen. He waved back, grinning, and chucked another grenade into the milling mass of Steelers for luck. Most of them were down by now, leaking foul-smelling ichor, but one was up and running, inhumanly fast, heading straight for Amberley. Amberley! I shouted, and she half-turned towards it, but I could see the warning had come too late. Her bolt pistol would never come up to aim in time, and I was too far away to intervene. The claws I'd seen tear open Terminator armour as though it were a crusty meat pie were already slicing at her cape when its head exploded, showering her with an unpleasant organic residue and leaving the body to topple to the floor. I looked up at the gallery again and saw Sorrel already seeking a fresh target for his long las. Emperor be praised, I breathed, my head still reeling with incomprehension, but grateful for this apparent miracle. I should have known better, of course. That moment of distraction almost cost me my life, and surely would have done if Jürgen hadn't shouted a warning. Commissar, behind you! I turned, expecting another foe to be charging in, and swung the chainsword in a reflexive defensive pattern. That surely saved my life, for instead of a cultist or a pure strain, which would have been bad enough, I came face to face with a creature from the worst of nightmares. Or to be more accurate, face to belly, as it was at least twice the height of a man. It was a twisted, grotesque, vast, bloated parody of a gene-stealer, and the whining blade bit deep into the arm which would surely have ripped my head off if it hadn't been for Jürgen's shouted warning. It howled then in anger and pain, and I was fighting desperately for my life. "It's the Patriarch!" Amberley yelled, as though I didn't know. From the corner of my eye, I could see her levelling the bolt pistol, waiting for an opening, but I was blocking her shot. I tried to twist out of the way, leaving room for her to aim, but the flailing multiple limbs of my bloated antagonist had boxed me in, and it was all I could do to keep parrying frantically with the chainsword as it swung one talon-tipped arm after another at me. This, then, was the source of the cancer which had infected Gravelax, the centre of the brood mind which the cultists shared, the instrument of the will of the tyrannid overmind which had sought to devour the sector unopposed by playing us off against the Tau. Die, damn you! I tried to bring my pistol to bear, but couldn't spare the concentration from the more urgent requirement to stay alive for the next few seconds, my entire attention on ducking, blocking, searching for an opening. Amberley's bolt pistol barked at last, and for an instant I thought I was saved, but the Patriarch fought on unharmed, and I realised she was keeping the cultists off my back. They were swarming out of the shadows now, desperate to help their sire, and closing fast. The only mercy was that the ones with guns couldn't use them for fear of hitting the monster I battled. Sorrel had no such inhibitions, however. A chunk of chitin on the creature's head suddenly burst into bloody fragments, and it roared again, but barely staggered, its natural armor proof against a conventional lasbolt. It was momentarily distracted, though, and I was able to get a good cut across its belly at last. It staggered, thick, foul-smelling ichor beginning to leak from the wound, then came at me again with renewed fury. Seeing that the creature was invulnerable, Sorrel switched his aim and began taking down the cultists who were trying to get to me, while Amberley continued to do the same. "Hold on, Commissar!" Jürgen was running down the stairs, his melter readied, and I prayed to the Emperor that he wasn't going to try a shot from there, as I'd never survive it. But he had more sense than that, at least. "Sorrel!" Amberley called. "Clear a path for Jürgen!" The two of them began to concentrate their fire on the cultists between my aid and the desperate battle I still fought. I sprang back a fraction too late and felt talons scrape my ribs, ripping through the armour beneath my coat and burning like fire. I swore and struck back at the thing, taking the hand which had wounded me off at the wrist. Ichor pumped from it like a fire hose, spraying me and everything else in the vicinity, and if anything, it redoubled its efforts. I turned my head reflexively, trying to keep my eyes clear, and thus got a clear view of Jürgen as he raced across the floor towards me. For a heart-stopping instant, I thought a couple of pure strains were about to eviscerate him, but for some reason they hesitated for a fraction of a second, as they were about to close, and Sorrel and Amberley dropped them both with well-aimed shots in the nick of time. I turned back to the Patriarch, encouraged by my success in wounding it, and swung the chainsword again. It never even flinched, batting the humming blade aside, and I ducked a wild swing of its lower left arm. "What does it take to kill you, you bastard?" I snarled, carried away by my own anger and disgust. "How about this?" Jürgen asked, appearing at my elbow. As he approached the creature, it staggered back like the pure strains had done, momentarily disorientated, and he jammed the barrel of the melter into the wound I'd cut into its belly. As he pulled the trigger, its entire midsection flashed into steam and foul-smelling offal. It staggered back, its eyes glazing, and swung its head in confusion. Then slowly, it toppled over, vibrating the stone floor with the violent impact of its fall.
"Thank you, Jürgen," I said. "Much obliged."
"Don't mention it, sir," he said, turning the weapon to seek another target, but the cultists were scattering back into the shadows. For the first time, some of them gave voice, a keening wail that sent shivers down my spine. We sent a few shots after them, but I, for one, had had my fill of combat for the time being, and was more than happy to leave them for the follow-up teams. Without the Patriarch to focus and direct them, they would be easy enough to pick off, but they would have to be eradicated eventually. Otherwise, one of the surviving pure strains would grow to take its place, and the whole vile cancer would start to take root again. "I thought you were dead," I said. Jürgen nodded.
"So did I, to be honest," he said. "They were almost on us when the wall collapsed. Then I thought it might be just as thin on the other side, so I took a shot at it on the off chance."
"I take it you were right," I said. He nodded again.
"Lucky that," he said.
"What about the others?" Amberley asked as we began to climb the stairs. Jürgen looked sombre.
"Sorrel made it through with me. We didn't see what happened to anyone else. But then he didn't have to. They would have been overwhelmed in seconds."
"Lucky you found us when you did," I said.
"Not really. Sorrel had come to join us as we reached the level of the gallery.
We found your tracks in the dust and just followed along.
How did you know it was us? Amberley asked. The marksman shrugged.
One pair of Imperial guard boots, one pair of ladies' shoes. Didn't need an inquisitor to work that one out.
I suppose not. She looked at him with something like respect. Once we heard shooting, we just moved to flank the position, Jürgen added. Standard operating procedure.
I see.
She nodded and pointed to the solid wooden door we'd reached at the top of the staircase.
Jürgen, if you'd be so kind.
My pleasure, miss.
He grinned, like a scholar student picked out to answer a question he knows the answer to, and vaporized it with a single blast from the melter, along with a generous section of the wall.
Emperor's teeth, I breathed, as we entered the passageway beyond. It was panelled in burnished wood, a thick carpet on the floor, and delicate porcelain stood on the occasional tables of unmistakable antiquity. Bright afternoon sun stabbed our eyes through mullioned windows, and a dreadful suspicion began to form in my mind.
I think I know where we are, I said.
Amberley nodded, her jaw set.
Me too, she said grimly.
The silence was shattered by the bark of a bolt pistol, and Sorrel fell, chunks of his brain spattering an expensive-looking tapestry and staining it beyond repair.
Commissar Kane and the charming Miss Vale.
Governor Grice was standing at the end of the corridor, gun held firmly in his hand, the air of vapid imbecility now totally dispelled.
You really are most annoyingly persistent,